This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years now, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear at length from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry friend, Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind some landmark projects. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. James Fine has been around the digital signage ecosystem since the earliest days. He founded Telecine in the mid-80s to do high-end video production for the corporate sector. By the mid-90s, he was getting into signage, putting network screens in Quebec casinos. We talk about the early days of the business, like spending $25,000 for 62-inch plasma displays for a retail job. That's $25,000 per display. Things have changed, and both the industry and his business have grown. Telecine now does a turnkey solution service for a variety of clients, and the work has won awards, notably for the great data-driven signage you'll see if you visit a Bloomberg office. Fine and Telecine are from Montreal, and one of the things we get into in this chat is why there are so many great creative shops coming out of that city. We spoke last week at Infocom. James Fine, thank you for joining me here at Infocom. Maybe first, give a rundown on what Telecine is all about, because you've been at this for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I feel old, actually. Is that what you were saying? Oh, no, I misunderstood.
You don't look old, though.
Thank you. That's very nice of you.
You don't look a day over 60.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. We've been at it since 1986, actually. We started our business producing high-end corporate videos for multinational corporations. Mm-hmm. We early on saw the potential of digital signage, and we knew that we were probably a little too early, but we still really were passionate about using it as a delivery mechanism for great content. So we got involved in 21 years ago, actually. We did our first digital signage installation for the only people who could afford it, which were all of the casinos in Quebec. And
interesting.
We were too early.
And why was it too early? Because
costs of the hardware were just way beyond, and we were spending our time basically creating primary demand, and anybody who's studied marketing knows that there's a lot of dead soldiers at the side of the road.
Yeah.
If you have to actually explain to people what it is digital signage is and then try to sell it to them.
Yeah, which has been the last at least 15 years, and it's only been very, very recently that's changed.
It has. And the cost of the technology is certainly one of the driving factors. Mm-hmm. When you can actually buy a fantastic screen for a tenth of the price that we used to have to charge.
Yeah, what was that like in 1996, I think you're saying?
Yes, exactly. We had some very very adventurous clients, people who really wanted to pave the way for in this new technology. Some retailers, Licenza Lingerie, for instance, was one of our clients at that time, and they had to pay $25,000 for a 62-inch plasma screen.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about some of this stuff years ago, and that you were putting stuff in Licenza and telling me the price of this, and I was just...
Well, it doesn't scale. That's the problem. Yeah. It doesn't scale. It was a great experiment, and we did it for them. They were very successful, so successful that they sold their business to a U.S. company, Limited Brands, and then we weren't playing with lingerie models anymore.
It was all because of the screens, right?
Of course it was, yes. Yeah. No, the screens were certainly exciting. We shot a lot of very interesting material with lingerie models. It was very captivating content, and it worked for them, but it was just too expensive to scale.
So you had that experience, but you say it was early, you obviously stuck with it.
We stuck with it, and I think it was great that we did, because slowly we were around when the technology caught up, the familiarity caught up with the market, and we were actually able to get involved with many very exciting projects. And we broke into the financial services market in a very interesting way, with Bloomberg, actually. It was one of our first financial services clients. We actually, it's an interesting story, we actually lost the RFP for that project. And then 2 years later, the client called us back and said, can you do what you said you were going to do? And we said, sure. And apparently what happened is the guy who won overpromised and underdelivered. I try to keep that straight. It's overpromise and under, no, it's underpromise and overdeliver. That's what we have to keep doing.
Yes. Much better approach.
Buy low, sell high. Yes. I got to keep that straight.
And Bloomberg is one of your real kind of signature clients, right? Because you keep on doing stuff for them.
We've kept that client for 12 years. We keep all of our clients for a long time. We keep all of our employees for a long time. I actually have some employees who've been with me since the beginning, mm-hmm. 31 years. Actually.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're kind of sentimental. No, the truth is that we try to build a great relationship both with the people that we're, with all the people we're working with.
Mm-hmm. And what's the breadth of what TeleCinate does? Because I know you're a Scala reseller, I know you do content and all that, but maybe just kind of explain what all entails a typical TeleCinate job. What can you do? What all can you do?
Well, really, we can do anything at this point. We have enough capabilities to do anything, but what we want to do is be involved in any project where we can add value. If we can't add value, we don't want to do it. If it's a question of, you know, putting up a few hundred or a few thousand screens and running a video clip in stores around the world, I mean, yes, can we do it? Sure. We have enough contacts to do that and do it well, but are we really adding any value to that?
Yeah.
No. No, so what we look for are projects where we can actually use our capabilities, and we have programmers, we have graphic designers, we have artists, we have video editors, we have all of the pieces that are necessary, project managers, I can't forget, mm-hmm. All of the pieces necessary to do anything, but what we want to do is actually push digital signage and create a useful place for it. Running video and what we call video wallpaper is not really something that requires our skills or something that we look for as a project. Mm-hmm. However, what we do love to do is spend our time traveling around the world. We just finished a project in Hong Kong. We're just about to start one in Tokyo and one in Moscow. And these are projects where we leverage dynamic data to create really interesting digital signage installations, create experiences, create environments, and build something that really hasn't been done that way before. And that's what gets us really excited.
Yeah, I've been blabbering away about the value and importance and the real coming on of data visualization for 3-4 years now. And it seems to finally be taking hold and people are understanding what you can do with it and how it's this whole set it and forget it kind of style of content and all the amazing things you can do with it. Was it the Bloomberg work that kind of got you going in that direction? Because they're all so data-driven?
Bloomberg actually got us very much into the financial services end of it. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's lots of dynamic data. You've been doing a great job explaining to people the potential of dynamic information and data visualization. I've been talking about it since we actually started. I thought digital signage and dynamic information were two things that were just made for each other.
Yeah.
And it's taken a long time until the world has really understood that now.
Yeah, that it's more than just showing the weather.
Yes. Well, you can use the weather data, but
sure.
Use it for something useful. Leverage it to create the typical example, sell umbrellas when it's raining. I mean, mm-hmm. and retailers are just starting to understand that now.
So give me a good example of the kind of projects that you've done where you really kind of leverage that.
Well, having access to the Bloomberg data, which is basically all of financial services information that exists in the world,
yep.
Has been a great advantage
all
for us.
All commonly structured and everything else, so, yeah.
Yeah, and that has been a huge advantage. And of course, we've used that to advantage. A lot of our clients are the large international banks that you'd be familiar with. Some of them are unfortunately not at liberty to give us permission to show that material, but I can tell you that that many of the things that you'll see, and you've published a couple of things on your site, and thank you for that. For instance, one of our latest projects last year was Bloomberg DC, their office in Washington.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad we were able to, Bloomberg allowed us to show that. Thank you, Bloomberg, because I think the more people are exposed to the potential, the better it will be for the industry.
And what all was involved in that one?
Well, okay, let me, it's a good question, but let me go one step back. I think that the whole industry would benefit greatly if the people who were actually creating the content and were thinking about what had to be on the screens were involved in the process from the beginning. One of the challenges that we keep having over and over again, even with the clients that we've been working with for over a decade, is that we get called in after the selection of hardware has been made.
Yeah.
And I mention that now because I'm trying to stop that. It's so wasteful. It's not because we really want to exert our influence. It's because we really don't want to have to shoehorn basically a concept into something that already is a huge constraint. Yeah. There's enough constraints on these projects. There's budget, there's timeline. Don't install 80 screens on a wall and then come to us and say, well, now what do we put on it?
Yeah.
Yes, we can do that. We love challenges, but wouldn't it have been better if we had been involved earlier and we could say, well, you know, you could have had more of an impact if you did 40 screens and did it this way.
Yeah.
Could have cut your budget in half and it would have been less work and more impressive.
Yeah, when I meet with consulting clients, I say, we're just going to park the whole technology discussion. And let's talk about what you want to do. What's the message you're trying to convey? Who's your audience? All those sorts of things. We're going to spend like a lot of time talking about that. And then when we know what the programming actually might look like, then we're going to start talking about like the canvas that you'd use and everything else. And it seems mind-blowing to them, but it's just so obvious when you stop and think about it.
Common sense is not that common, unfortunately. We wish that you were involved in more of these projects, Dave. It would be so refreshing to actually come in to a project and at the stage when an architect is designing the space.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, that's interesting. What are you trying to achieve? Mm-hmm. Let's look at the current technology, not the technology from last year or the year before, but let's look at the technology that's going to be available in 1 year when you're actually going to be building this, because that's a big issue. You know, a lot of the technology is end of life very quickly. And so there's so many considerations that actually should be taken into account. You know this. Mm-hmm. I wish everyone knew this. It would make our lives much easier and the digital signage projects much more successful.
Mm-hmm. So in the case of Bloomberg DC, they had their plan together, they knew what they wanted to do, and you were able to step into that? Or was it another case of, oh, we've got a video wall now, what are we going to do with it?
Most of our clients are still doing that, even the ones who should know better. Large companies don't have a great institutional memory anymore because there's so much turnover.
Yeah.
In the case of Bloomberg, they do have a very experienced audiovisual staff, so what they install is usually top quality, and there's reasons for it. But sure, we'd love to be at the table earlier in any of these projects. I think it would benefit the client greatly.
And I'm still looking for some... Describe one of these jobs that you've done. Unfortunately, it's a podcast, so people can't see it, but you're going to have to
we just lay
it out for me visually.
The project we just finished in Hong Kong is 74 LCD screens.
And that's for Bloomberg as well?
No, another client.
Client X?
Client X. And they're placed in an elevator lobby above the elevators. Very long, a lot of screens, and... that's a very unusual installation. A lot of these installations seem to be done where the audience can't really back up and appreciate a large canvas.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to create the content en conséquence, whatever that is in English.
And what are they going for there?
They were trying to achieve branding, pretty much. Branding for the financial services company.
So you would be developing this giant... God knows how many pixels resolution canvas that you've got to design, and was it a horseshoe or something?
It's actually a dog leg, and yes, I can show you some photographs of that. I'm hoping that the client will give us permission to show it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to talk about it. I think there's a lot of things that can be learned from it. I try to speak at conferences whenever I can because I think that there's really so many mistakes to make. Why make the same ones twice?
Mm-hmm.
We can all advance the industry if we try to share the lessons learned.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we love to do, and that's why I'm actually at Infocom. I'm taking some of the seminars that you've organized and looking forward to learning from some of the other mistakes that have been made.
When you come to a trade show like this, do you spend much time on the exhibit hall looking at new technologies, and how do you filter that, because there's so much stuff and a lot of it is bleeding edge?
You're so right, Dave. There is a lot of stuff and there is a lot to do. Most of the time I spend is building relationships with suppliers, catching up with confreres, and of course brought a team. We bring a team to these events so that we can actually catch any new technologies. Not vaporware, not things that don't exist, but you know, things that are past the bleeding edge, because that's really where we want to be. We want to use and leverage those technologies, both software and hardware, to advantage. And we're investigating a lot of those as a regular course of business.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
In typical jobs, is it still LCD driven, or are you starting to see a lot of a move to the fine pitch LED stuff?
We actually have seen a lot of move to LED. A lot of our work is LED now, and for good reason. LED has a lot of advantages. One, we're at the point now where LED is roughly equivalent in cost to LCD installations in many cases, depending on your resolution. Mm-hmm. And two, of course, you have no emollients, no lines to design around, screen bezel, so that's a huge advantage. And three, you can make it any shape you want. And that's another huge advantage. We're trying to create experiences. We're trying to create something that people can't experience in their home. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why would they get off their couch?
And I guess a lot of the jobs that you've been involved in, they tend to be in public areas that have atriums and everything else, where you're also dealing with daylight.
And that's in it. You just made the fourth reason why LEDs are extremely useful. Mm-hmm. Sure, you can get high brightness LCDs, but at a cost.
Mm-hmm. Are there technologies that have come along? God knows I've seen them that where I thought, this is kind of cool, but it's not going anywhere. I'm thinking about, you know, some of the gesture-driven stuff and glasses-free 3D and so on. Or have you guys played with that at all or just discarded it?
We play with all of these new technologies in-house. We try to do as much research and development as we can, because clients will come to us with a challenge, and that challenge will be hardware as well as software as well as content. What their challenge is trying to create an experience, and these are all arrows in our quiver. These are all tools that we can use to create that experience. For instance, we're just finishing up a very large project for the Canadian History Museum in Ottawa, Gatineau. And that was, for any of our Canadian friends or anybody visiting Ottawa, take a look at that. That's an interesting example of a lot of technology in a very small space. Some of it pushing the envelope a little bit, but there's so much more that can be done with the technology now. The gesture, yes, we're actually working on a project right now, but it's how you use it. It's not, you know, you can't do these things gratuitously. You have to do it for a reason, to create an experience.
Yeah.
And that has to be part of the overall vision.
And when does gesture work? Like, I have seen attempts to use it where you have to stand in front of something and, you know, wave your arms and everything else to manipulate things. And I thought, why would anybody do that? versus I've seen some gesture things where you don't even really know that there's a sensor that's kind of tracking you, and it's responding to your movement without you having to kind of technically engage and say, okay, now I'm going to do this to make that happen.
I think all great installations are closer to art than anything else. And in a piece of art, not only do you kind of create an emotion, but you also discover as you go. It's like a really interesting friend. You discover layers as you learn more about them.
Yeah.
And that's what great art should be, and that's what great digital signage installation should be. So what you were describing, the second one, where, oh, wow, I've walked past this thing 5 times today, And I just realized it did something when I moved in a certain way.
Yeah,
that's interesting. And that's art. And that is the kind of interactive technology, I think, that has a future.
You mentioned earlier when you were describing the range of skills and people that you have graphic designers and you have artists. And there's a distinction between the two?
Yes, of course. Every artist or graphic designer, whatever term you want to use, has a different skills. Mm-hmm. We actually discovered that the project really dictates who we should be working with. Sometimes we're actually working with artists who happen to understand the digital medium. But there's other times when we can use digital signage artists who are very experienced and do great jobs at what they do.
Right.
But there's a difference.
Okay. What is it about Montreal? I love Montreal. It's a great city and everything else. But there's something about the creative process and the output that comes out of that city. You've got you guys, certainly got Moment Factory. Arsenal Media came out of there. Float 4 comes out of there. There's another company called XYZ, I think.
Yeah, sure.
A whole bunch of them. Like, why?
Well, it's a question that we've asked ourselves too. It's not something that we lose sleep over because it's great. I think you've been to Montreal. It's a wonderful place to live, a wonderful place to work. It's an affordable city, but it's also has a culture. It has the Latin culture, the French culture. And I think, and we're kind of a halfway point between, you know, Europe and the U.S. I think we have the work ethic of the U.S., but we have the aesthetic of Europe. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the things that go into making Montreal such a special place for creation. The thing that I love about it is that, you know, pretty much all of my staff is, you know, can own a home, they can own a condo, they can have a good life. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of like offshore suppliers the way things are going with the U.S. dollar now. It seems like the best of all worlds right now, because obviously we can do a lot more for less because our cost of living is lower and our dollar's lower.
When you started, you didn't have a lot of quote-unquote competition. Is it getting more challenging now to find good people because there are all these companies that have bubbled up?
Well, our goal has never been to be huge.
Right.
Our goal has always been to be the best at what we do. And so I'm not always looking for people, but when I am looking for people, it doesn't seem to be that hard to find them. I think our reputation has preceded us, and I hope that continues.
And you're based in almost in old Montreal, right? In the old block.
We bought an old bank building
years ago, right?
The east end of Montreal, yeah.
Yeah.
Near the Jacques Cartier Bridge.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And you've got the whole building?
Yeah, my wife and I actually live in a loft on the top floor, and we use the other three floors for the office.
And then you can have functions up top, like watching fireworks.
Unfortunately, I won't.
You invited me, but I can't be in the city that day.
I'll keep inviting you, and we keep inviting our friends to come and join us because it's a wonderful experience. The fireworks are a real temporal art, and we appreciate what goes into them.
We tried to do this podcast months ago, contacted you, and you said, "Can't right now, I'm off sailing," and I'm going to be sailing for quite a long time. Can you describe, like, what all's going on there? Is this your semi-retirement?
Well, I've met so many people who wait way too long to do the things that they really want to do, and then maybe by that point they're not healthy enough. So my wife and I decided that we wanted to go sailing. So we've taken our sailboat from Lake Champlain to Fiji right now, and we go back.
That's a bit of a change.
We go back whenever I can get away for a few months. I go back to the boat and we move it from one country to another. I guess we're sailing around the world really slowly.
Were you an sufficiently experienced sailor to, like, sailing on Lake Champlain it's beautiful and everything else, but that's contained lake, and all of a sudden you're open ocean.
Yeah, I guess I'm experienced enough because we've made it this
far.
That's the real test, but you're going to laugh. The worst weather I've ever experienced up to this date has been on Lake Champlain.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And sailing on a lake should not be underestimated. The shores and hazards are much closer than when you're in the middle of the ocean. In the middle of the ocean, there's really nothing to hit.
Yeah.
When you're on Lake Champlain, there's a lot to hit.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're running into trouble, at least you got time to figure it out before you whack a big boulder or...
You got it.
Or whatever.
You got it. So I'm incredibly lucky. I have a fantastic staff. They're able to run the company while I'm gone. I'm in constant touch. I have a what they call high-speed internet on the boat, so they can reach me whenever they need to. And I think it works out great. And I come back with lots of energy.
Yeah, so how long do you go for?
This year we'll be going for 4 months.
Wow. So you're sailing for 4 months.
Yeah, we're actually involved with an organization called Sea Mercy, we are now, and they rebuilt a lot of schools and helped a lot of people after Cyclone Winston last year. Mm-hmm. And not really good at building, but I do know something about video production and media. Mm-hmm. So we actually helped them by creating some promotional material for their efforts because it's a great organization. Mm-hmm.
And what all was involved there? You produce videos that then get distributed?
Yeah, we help them produce these videos. They use them to raise funds and get more participation. Mm-hmm. They have some very ambitious projects for the future. And we're going back there to help them with another project. Yes, of course, I'll pick up a hammer and help, but I'm not really contributing that way. But we are really contributing, I think, and I hope, with these promotional videos.
Mm-hmm. What do you see coming in this space over the next little bit?
Well, there's obviously some consolidation.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned, as I told you at the beginning, with getting involved in these large projects that are just not pushing, you know, the envelope of great digital signage. What I see, and that's happening on a regular basis, is people coming to us with new challenges and trying to create new experiences. We're doing it now for office buildings, where adding a little bit of creativity to the lobby of a building can actually increase the value of the building 10 times, 20 times more than the cost of the creativity. And I think
and
that's
retain,
a great place.
Retain tenants as well.
Retain tenants.
Because all of a sudden they're in a cool building and they want to stay.
Yeah, it's such a small effort to create such a big impact. So that's fun. That's what we're working on now. And we're looking forward to doing a lot more of that. But that's, you know, the cross-section between art, dynamic information, great technology. It's all a really fun challenge. Mm-hmm. And I would retire on the sailboat if I wanted to. But the fact is that I have probably just as much fun, if not more fun, working on these projects as I do on the boat. So I'm trying to do both, sort of having my cake and eating it too.
Yeah, and it's not... You said something interesting about building lobbies and all that and how you can make a difference. And I think one of the mistakes, but misperceptions or misconceptions about signage these days is to do a project for a company. It doesn't have to be a massive video wall. It doesn't have to be a huge investment or something. It can be, like you say, just a handful of displays in the right place showing the right content that can really change things. Is that part of the, you know, the opportunity as well?
That's exactly part of it. We've done some art installations, which I think are fantastic. Just using a few 20-inch screens, it doesn't have to be expensive. It just has to be creative.
Yeah. Why are there still so few creative companies in this industry? You've got hundreds and hundreds of software companies. But if somebody asked me, okay, well, who are the creative shops that are really functioning in digital signage? Well, you know, I'm locked up almost immediately trying to think, okay, who's out there?
I guess if we've gotten this far into the podcast, I guess we can talk about this because I really don't want, you know, creative companies to know about this potential. So, you know, if you've listened this far in the podcast, I guess it's okay to mention this. I don't know. Quite frankly, I find the medium extremely exciting. I think there's enormous potential. It's a niche that we find profitable, fulfilling, and we're having a great time with it right now. I don't understand why there isn't more competition, but I really don't want too many people to know that.
No. Is part of the challenge that if you hung out a shingle as just a creative shop, we will do the creative for this digital canvas, that limits you? Do you need to have complementary skills to be able to project manage, to be able to, you know, spec the right material and everything else? Do you have to be a full solutions provider as opposed to just the artistes?
You need to have, if you don't have all of those skills in-house, you need to have a really good collection of suppliers. Mm-hmm. And you have to know your software very well. One of the things that's been so important for us is our in-depth knowledge of the Scala software. Mm-hmm. It's what we use for most of our projects. And the reason we use it for most of our projects is we can do just about anything with it. Mm-hmm. We've done projects with it that Scala didn't think we could do with it mm-hmm. because of our in-depth knowledge. We obviously have programmers who are constantly adding to the capabilities, mm-hmm. But you really need a complete understanding of the entire medium, everything, whether you do it or not. Mm-hmm. You need to know how it's going to impact the experience. Mm-hmm. So we don't actually install a lot of the screens ourselves, but we need to be involved in the process and the selection of switching equipment and mm-hmm. EDID emulation and all of those things, because any one of those things can break mm-hmm. the project.
Mm-hmm. Last question, setting aside work that Telecine has done, what's the thing that you've seen out there, the project that you've seen where you went, wow, that's really something?
I think the idea of not limiting the output to screens is important. This is an art. And mm-hmm. if you're using LED lights, and of course they just lit up the Jacques Cartier Bridge with a really ambitious project in Montreal, transforming airports and creating environments that are memorable and transforming lobbies of buildings and doing it in such a way that it becomes a landmark and a focal point mm-hmm. where before it was just, ignored. Mm-hmm. I think that's great. And I think that's what we should do much more of in this world. That's what digital signage can do. And that's, if we do it right, that's projects that will last for a decade. Some of our projects have been running for over a decade, almost as is. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, the test of a good project.
James Fine, thank you.
Yeah, great chatting with you. I'm glad we finally got to do this,
yes.
Dave.
Back to the boat.
No, back to the show.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 169, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 169 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 169 the blog and now the podcasts are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.